Short, Sheldrake on Shakespeare. Sheldrake on Marlowe. As you will have noticed from my title, I'm taking a sideways swipe at the mission statement of this podcast series by turning my attentions to Christopher Marlowe. He was an exact contemporary of Shakespeare, born as he was in the same year, as David Oakes reminded me in that Globe special a little while back. Marlowe was a blisteringly successful playwright, and his violent death in 1593 at the age of about 29 is one of English literature's greatest losses. I may return to the question of what might have been for the sake of a neat ending, so I restrict myself as much as possible to what he actually did do during his short life. He was born in Canterbury in 1564, went to the King's School in that city, and then attended the University of Cambridge until about 1587, when he came to London and took the theatrical world by storm. It was appropriate, then, that his first play, Tamburlaine the Great, should feature a conqueror in the title role. This was his first big success, and we believe it to have been performed in 1587. From then until 1593, Marlowe produced some of the most astonishingly promising and brilliant work that you could hope for. In roughly this order, he wrote a sequel to Tamburlaine, then Dr. Faustus, The Jew of Malta, The Massacre at Paris, and finally, or so we believe, Edward II. Dido, Queen of Carthage, is knocking about in there somewhere as well. In amongst these, he also wrote poetry, most famously Hero and Leander. Marlowe made several direct contributions to English drama. In these plays, he gives us characters who reach for the stars. From an imagination fired by the ferocious ambition of Renaissance philosophy, as well as Renaissance literature, Marlowe produced characters and plays that were constantly pushing at the bounds of what was possible and, indeed, what was decent. In Dr. Faustus, we have a man determined to escape his own confines by resorting to the supernatural. In the figure of Barabbas, in The Jew of Malta, we have a man trying to exercise power over those who would usually be his superiors. And in Edward II, we see a monarch resolutely ignoring the trammels of kingship. In addition to these lodestars of character, he also made innovations in verse and language which would echo down the decades. So that is an independent assessment of Marlowe's particular gifts, as it were. But what about Shakespeare? What was the nature of the influence on each other's individual talents? Did they get along? And who was better than whom? Well, the question of influence is fairly straightforward. Shakespeare's history plays owe much to Marlowe. The robust verse, the multi-part drama, and the towering individual characters of Shakespeare's Henry VI plays owe a very great deal indeed. And it seems to me that without Marlowe's Edward II, there would have been no Shakespeare's Richard II. Both tell the story of effete kings of England systematically enraging their nobles, both in personal and political matters. Both, to use my own critical expression, feature kings who are tragic heroes trapped in a history play. Would The Merchant of Venice, a Jew in a Mediterranean setting trying to make his way by nefarious means against unjust circumstances, have come about in the form it did without Marlowe's The Jew of Malta? Certainly not. When Shakespeare gets round to writing his greatest tragic heroes, Marlowe's memory is distant, but in his great characters there are echoes of the man we might almost think of as Shakespeare's role model. In As You Like It, written in 1599 when Shakespeare was on the cusp of the grand tragedies, one character speaks this couplet: Dead shepherd, now I find thy sore of might. Whoever loved that loved not at first sight. The dead shepherd of the first line is Christopher Marlowe, from whose poem Hero and Leander the second line comes. In what seems to me to be an affectionate quotation, we see that old Chris Marlowe is not forgotten yet, and there are other direct references to Marlowe in Shakespeare's plays. But now to the question you've all been waiting for. Would Marlowe have exceeded Shakespeare's brilliance had he lived? Well, who knows? But one can easily imagine Shakespeare breathing a sigh of relief when the news came through that Marlowe was dead. Thank God for that, the only real competitor, dead as a doornail. Great news. I mean this half-jokingly, of course, but only half. To bring us back to reality, how should we see Marlowe now? Alfred Tennyson saw Marlowe as the morning star to herald Shakespeare's dazzling sun. Tennyson knew a thing or two about artists cut off in their prime, the death of his friend Arthur Hallam being the impetus for his own great work of mourning In Memoriam. Swinburne thought of Marlowe as the most daring pioneer in all our literature. I think that's a bit more like it. If Marlowe had lived, I think the work would have been of a quite different kind from anything else we have. Shakespeare's emphasis was nearly always on the theatre. What's going to make a good scene? What's going to make a good speech? Shakespeare worked as an actor, and he brought that intimate knowledge of drama into his writing. Ben Jonson was interested in a completely different style of playmaking, classically informed and satirically charged. But Marlowe was more intellectually engaged and reckless than any of his contemporaries, and he gave the world a handful of plays that stretch not only the bounds of drama, but the bounds of literature and philosophy. To append some of his own words, Marlowe is infinite riches in a little room. Thank you for listening. I suppose the Shakespeare news that will set the world alight for this week is that I am preparing to head off to Hertfordshire next weekend to be the literary advisor for the Pendley Shakespeare Festival. We will be rehearsing and performing from scratch in 3 weeks, The Comedy of Errors and Hamlet. I will be acting in both plays, would you believe, as well as fulfilling a host of literary, dramaturgical, assistant directory functions. I have also been tasked with organising a series of events and talks with visiting speakers. I hope to be feeding some of those experiences back into this podcast, perhaps even a few interviews. We shall see. I know that the listenership for this podcast is spread across the globe, so I'm not expecting you to fly in, but if you do happen to be in or around London and fancy a rather delightful bit of outdoor Shakespeare, then Google Pendley Shakespeare Festival and grab yourself some tickets. Join me next week. Until then, farewell.